Hello?
Hey, what's up?
Oh, you know, the huge.
Scraping by?
Scraping by.
Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Cass, and welcome back to Scraping By. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
How's your week been, Alex?
My week has been pretty uneventful. I started applying to some, like, other jobs that are, like, less psychology related because we're just getting to that at this point.
Getting to a place of desperation.
To, like, a medical scribe, where I'm pretty sure you just, like, transcribe the doctor's notes and stuff like that and, like, help around the office. I didn't hear back. But it's only been, like, 2 days. I'm not really, I don't have any medical experience or anything, so I'm not expecting much from that.
Yeah, that's fine.
And, yeah, it's mainly been pretty uneventful. I made a new recipe. I baked a yam.
Ooh.
It was actually so good. I've never done that.
I love yams.
I, like, baked it like a whole, like, a baked potato. Uh-huh. It was a yam. And then I, like, put butter in it.
Yum.
It was really good.
I've heard it's good with, like, butter and brown sugar.
I know. I need to try that.
Yeah, that sounds so good.
So good. How's your week been?
Also uneventful. I've worked, like, literally 6 days in a row, which has been brutal.
Jesus.
Yeah, I have a 1 day break and then I go work again tomorrow. So my whole brain has been mush.
I know, we haven't been rock climbing.
No, I know, yeah. I haven't been able to rock climb because all I do is work.
All I do is work.
Literally. Other than that, though, it hasn't. I can't even think of anything. Yeah, literally all I did was work. And I rock climbed once yesterday, which now, because I took a few days off, I'm, like, insanely fucking sore from it.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, it's, like, hard to know how to, like, stretch your back before rock climbing.
Yeah, I don't know a single back stretch.
I don't think you're able to get to those places.
No.
So.
I'm not in a place of back stretches quite yet. Probably should be, though, with all my back issues. Oh, you had some fun insurance issues.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't those are even, like, fun. That. I had a physical therapy appointment.
Do you want to elaborate on what the physical therapy entails?
Yeah, well, I've just been, like, having stomach issues, and I had to, like, get a surgery, and then they were, like, there was, like, some, like, residual issues, and they were, like, oh, like, I don't really know, like, just go to a physical therapist. And I was, like, that's not gonna work. But I was, like, well, whatever, I'll just try it. Anyway, I've gone to, like, 4 appointments. They're, like, just try, like, breathing deeply.
Just breathe.
And I'm, like, I don't really get it, what it's supposed to do, but, anyway, I had the last one yesterday, and they called me, like, a couple hours before the appointment, and they were, like, by the way, like, your insurance is inactive. I was like, oh, like, let me figure that out. And so I called the insurance company, and somehow I got to a real person after, like, 10 minutes.
Oh, that has literally never happened to me.
No, I was literally like, wow, by the grace of God, I didn't have to talk to a robot. But, and then they were like, I got to the insurance, and they were like, oh, yeah, like, we switched to a completely different company. And I was like, oh.
Okay.
So, and I'm on my parents' insurance still for health insurance, and I called my dad, and he was like, I didn't hear about that either. And then, so I, like, was talking to the insurance. They gave me the information. I got it figured out, whatever. And then I went to the appointment, and then they were like, oh, yeah, like, since it switched to new insurance company, your deductible reset. So this appointment's, like, fully out of pocket. And I was like, oh, bet.
Yes, my useless appointment is going to be paid for by me. That's
but
great.
It's fine. We're also going to be talking some more about health insurance during this episode because it will relate.
Yeah.
So that's just a little side note. And you've had some interesting insurance experiences.
I've experienced insurance horrors. Literally,
I feel like most people have.
Yeah, I feel like not a single person out there has not experienced insurance horrors. But my horrors were over the summer. I went to urgent care for something. I don't even remember what it was. But anyways, I, like, get to urgent care, give them my information, and then they make me aware that I no longer have health insurance, which I had no idea. And apparently, because I was also on my dad's insurance, he had no idea either that we got dropped. So then I'm like, I literally had a full, like, mental breakdown in the urgent care, which is such a humbling experience. And I, like, they told me, like, yeah, this is going to have to be out of pocket. And I was like, fuck. Thank God. I mean, it wasn't that much. I still have yet to pay it. I should probably get on that.
Yeah.
But debt is not real in my brain. Medical debt is not real in my brain. So, yeah. And then I had to, like, go through this whole process of getting on to my own separate insurance God willing, qualify for Medicare. So I'm on that now, but I'm just waiting for them to kick me off. I know it's coming soon.
Yeah, I feel like insurance stuff always sucks. And I feel like I've been like pretty lucky because I know that like so many people's medical insurance issues are not like you just like make a call and you have to pay one appointment out of pocket. It's like they have like thousands or like hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt and shit. But we'll get into some of that in a minute. Okay, so speaking of health insurance and such, this was making us think about famous Luigi.
Our boy Luigi.
And so we were going to talk a little bit about that. I'm sure that most people have heard of Luigi Mangione, and I feel like we are a little bit late to this, but it is still somewhat current.
Yeah. Has his trial even happened yet?
I don't think so, no. Okay, so brief recap in case anybody needs that. On December 4th, the CEO of United Healthcare, Brian Thompson, was shot by Luigi Mangione in New York City. And then there was a manhunt, and then 5 days later, Luigi was arrested in Pennsylvania.
In a McDonald's, nonetheless.
In a McDonald's, where someone reported him, apparently.
Yeah, y'all are against your own class. Come on now.
But hey. And so the main situation that we have been thinking about is sort of like where we stand on this and how the news media and social media responded to this, which seemed, in my experience, were very different responses. From what I saw, there was a lot of like thirst trap edits of Luigi on like TikTok and Instagram, and it was like, Luigi, like, he's so hot, he whatever. They did that like perp walk in where they just like in his like orange jumpsuit, and he just looked so like photo ready, and like it just was like
he could have been on the cover of Vogue.
Yeah, that was not, the police didn't get what they wanted from that, I don't think.
No, they absolutely did not.
So anyway, people online were obsessed with that, and then I guess basically what I saw from the news was like sort of the opposite, or sort of like countering that and being like, all these people are like supporting a murderer online, and this is like horrible, people don't have morals anymore.
Oh my god, girl, get out.
So that's sort of like interesting. I was reading a Substack article by Edward Angueso Jr., and he has a Substack page called The Tech Bubble, and he like pulled together a bunch of stuff. If you want to hear some more in-depth and eloquently written information about this, go to his Substack. But basically, he was sort of described the news media's response and how the violence of the insurance company was sort of ignored or not viewed as violence.
Yeah,
when
so for real,
countless people like were didn't like get their claims denied or like die as a result of not getting treatment because they don't have insurance. And this is a complex issue because I don't want to describe this as a way that's like excusing murdering Brian Thompson, because I don't necessarily, I don't think that was the best course of action. And it is sort of, it is somewhat hard to tell what Luigi's intention was, because it seems like it was motivated by anger. I remember like reading about like his mom's experience with health insurance and some of his own. And then, so it's hard to tell if it was like that or if it was like him wanting to bring more attention to the issues in healthcare or some sort of combination. So basically though, I resonate with the like, I like, of course he's angry. Like a lot of people are angry, rightfully so, at the healthcare system. So I'm understanding of his experience in that sense.
Totally.
And I don't think that murdering Brian Thompson was the best thing to do.
Yeah. It's like it comes down to like an ethical issue of...
Yeah.
Obviously, Brian Thompson, in so few words, is also somewhat of a murderer. Because I'm pretty sure, too, I read somewhere that United Healthcare, I think they had the highest amount of claim rejections. I think it was like 34% or something like that.
Okay. I literally found out that the United Health Group is the largest company, or the fourth largest company in the United States, behind only Walmart, Amazon, and Apple.
Jesus
Christ. I did not realize it was that huge. And basically, like, after this happened, they have now, like, replaced the CEO position with someone else, and the company's, like, policies haven't changed at all.
Go fucking
And they're probably not going to. Yeah, in that sense, it's, like, there needs to obviously be, like, a more broad systemic approach, and I don't want to like take some moral high ground because I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah. We don't know what we're talking about.
And yeah, I don't know what to do about it. It's like these insurance companies lobby they spend hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying politicians so that insurance gets kept as a private for-profit like situation. So, and that's obviously really hard to make a difference in because I don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to lobby someone
else. Fuck, I wish I did.
But I also found that Luigi received donations from over 10,000 people, amounting to over $300,000 to support his legal defense.
Damn.
Which I was like, wow. And
hey, he deserves a fair trial.
Yeah. I don't know, who knows whether those were people that were like aligned with his actions or people that were like, you're hot, let me send you some money.
Probably a mix of both.
But I do think the sexualization on social media of him did detract from the message that he may have been trying to send.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And I did see some like posts about like, oh, this just like passed over really quickly and people like ignored sort of what was happening, and like, or it was treated as a trend. And I think in a sense that's true, and I also think that everything is treated as a trend like when it's on social media. Mm-hmm. Like you hear about something no matter the scale of it, and then it like goes away. And
yeah, it's like the consequence of the constant news churn is like that's why we're all so desensitized to stuff like this. Like, any event, most Americans at least, and probably elsewhere, are extremely desensitized to it because we just run through it so fast. Like,
yeah.
And we don't even hear about some of the stuff that goes on in the country because it's in the news cycle and then it's out and then it's the next horrible thing.
Yeah, it's true. Just one thing after another.
Literally.
Do you want to hear some fun facts about the U.S. healthcare system?
Oh, God. I sure do.
Okay, so just lay the groundwork a little bit. The U.S. Census website says that in 2023, over 65% of Americans had private health insurance. And this is coming from an AI overview from Google. So pulled from a number of different places. But it says, in 2024, the average annual cost of health insurance per person is just under $9,000 a year.
What? And oh my God.
The average cost for a family is over $25,000 per year.
Shut the fuck up.
For health insurance.
That's literally fucking insane.
Yeah.
And that's like how much I make a year.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd. And a lot of times it is like somewhat connected to like someone's employment and there's like options that way, but this is the average cost apparently. So
that's horrifying, actually.
What's more, also incredibly diabolical, the average annual health insurance deductible in 2024 was over $5,000 per person, or $10,000 per person.
What the fuck is even the point of getting it at this point?
Which means that the average person would have to pay $5,000 out of pocket before the insurance that they pay $9,000 a year for starts doing anything at all.
Literally, what's the point?
Literally unbelievable.
What is the point?
I have no idea.
You might as well just be fucking uninsured at that point.
Deductible like varies depending on the plan, like the cost varies depending on the plan. But these are the averages, and that is a scam if I've ever heard of one.
What the fuck? That's literally insane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you won't catch me paying for private insurance. I would literally rather be uninsured than that. I'd rather have medical debt than deal with that. That's fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like literally, what's the point? There is no point.
And then considering the effectiveness of these insurance companies, the Physicians for a National Health Program found that annual deaths in the United States due to a lack of insurance are estimated between 40 and 80,000 people.
Jesus Christ.
Newer take this with somewhat of a grain of salt because it's a ChatGPT response, but they did pull from a 2024 analysis that estimated that 200,000 annual deaths are potentially linked to insurance-related issues, including lack of coverage and access to care.
Oh my fucking God. For reference, that's like the entire population of the city that we live in.
Yeah, 200,000 people is unbelievable. And that's either because people have insurance and it's not covering it, or maybe that they can't afford insurance because it costs fucking $9,000 per person per year. Plus a $5,000 deductible.
That makes me want to fucking puke. That makes me, like, sick. That is disgusting. Yeah.
And a lot of times coverage is also denied Even when doctors say that a certain procedure is medically necessary, because the insurance company will be like, no, we don't really cover that.
Oh, my fucking God.
So they sort of get to pick and choose as well, which is really upsetting.
Well, do you remember, like, right, I think it was right before, right after the shooting, I think it was Anthem, they wanted to, like, they weren't gonna cover all of anesthesia for a surgery, and a bunch of surgeons were like, what are you talking about? They were like,
if it exceeds the certain amount of time, it will start coming out of pocket.
Like, yeah, I bet you with no fucking medical degree really knows what you're talking about, as opposed to an anesthesiologist.
Yeah.
Sit the fuck down.
I'm pretty sure they reversed that.
Yeah, they were scared. They were scared we were coming for their CEO next.
Like, are you kidding?
What the fuck?
A cap on anesthesia. That's so fucking foul.
If that is not the clearest indicator that late-stage capitalism is fucking evil, then I don't know what else is.
Yeah.
We live in hell.
But the thing is that a lot of Americans are for private healthcare.
And why?
Well, there's the idea that's like, I earned it. Like, get off your ass and work if you want. Oh, if you want to be able to afford it.
I swear to God.
Which is sort of an example of false consciousness that we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
That's, like, really, really wild.
That's literally insane. That it's, like,
yeah. I, in my opinion, and I think many people, like, people deserve to have healthcare.
Yeah.
Especially when you live in, like, a economically, well, I don't know if I want to say, I mean, a wealthy country. I don't think successful in terms of, like, the way that it's handled.
Yeah, we're not looking too good right now. Economically, but wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should be able to go to a doctor if you're fucking sick for free. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Literally, that's, like, not an insane concept.
And then it's, like, the people that have more money, maybe, I assume, is mainly the people that are, like, I earned it. Like, get up and work if you want the health insurance.
Oh,
it's, like, the sort of, like...
It's giving poor people should die. It's literally giving that. I'm like, oh, okay, I see your intentions now. I know exactly what you're saying, loud and clear.
Yeah.
You don't think poor people deserve rights. Cool.
Yeah. And then... I definitely heard something that was like, I can't remember where, I think it was low-key on TikTok. But
we definitely get our news there.
It said that it would cost like $2,000 per person per year to have universal health care in the United States. It would be taken in the form of taxation instead of like paying directly to a private insurance company. But $2,000 is a lot less than $9,000.
Yeah, per person I'll per take year. It. Also, hey, can we take some money out of the military maybe and just put it into public health care?
Yeah.
Come on now.
And I did double check this by looking it up on ChatGPT.
It's giving brain rot.
And it did say it would be cheaper. So how can you argue with the robot?
Literally, how can you argue with a robot? You can't.
But it's like, how do we get there? Because obviously the private insurance companies that make all the money are like, we're not. We're going to be funding absolutely nothing that has to do with universal healthcare.
No. But they aren't even giving you real healthcare.
Because profit is prioritized over the well-being of people. And then circling back to the Luigi situation, I think that it seems like Brian Thompson sort of like personified the fucked up healthcare system. And so like that's why he was like a target of Luigi. And that was sort of like the statement. That's sort of what I'm drawing from it. Sort of calling out how horrible it is that the healthcare system doesn't really give a shit like whether you get the care you need. It's like, did you pay your premium? Because we're gonna get our bag whether you get your health care.
We're getting our money whether you're here or not.
And so that's really horrible. I don't think that it's like a pick a sides thing. I do certainly think that Brian Thompson's position was really foul in
that man ways. He had blood on his hands.
Yeah, and so did Luigi, but I kind of think that Luigi seemed maybe to be motivated by like shifting the system. Brian Thompson was motivated maybe more by getting his bag.
Yeah, literally lining his pockets.
So I don't want to like make some statement that it's like okay to murder someone because I don't think that's true. And they both seem to have murdered people. So I will say that.
Moral of the story, they both have blood on their hands and...
And there is something, like, something has to be done.
Something has to be done. This is obviously,
a symptom of the problematic direction that we're heading with the system.
Like, yes.
People are getting so upset that they're literally murdering people. And that should say something about something needing to be done.
Yeah, it really should. It's a reaction to the system as a whole and the system that continually fucks the working class over and over and over again.
Speaking
and
never ends. Of the working class.
Speaking of the working class.
Would you like to talk to us about Karl Marx or someone like that?
Yes, Daddy Marx. Yes, so when I first, as y'all know, I studied poli-sci, so I read a lot of Karl Marx in my time. But when this was first unraveling, I was actually hopeful, in a sense, that this would finally wake people up to a degree of class consciousness, because I think we seriously lack that in American society. And for a second there, it looked like maybe it would, and then it fizzled out because, like we said before, the news cycle is constantly churning, and we basically all moved on.
What we got out of that was increased security for healthcare CEOs.
Literally, that wasn't the point. That was not the point. But my thought was that we would talk about Karl Marx and his theories with regards to class consciousness and the implications of capitalism on society as a whole and the working class. So that's what we're kind of going to get into. If you've never heard of or read anything by Karl Marx, no worries. We're going to break it down. Okay, so a little intro to who Karl Marx was. He was born in 1818 in Prussia, which is now Germany. He was a sociologist, a revolutionary, and an economist, and he published the Communist Manifesto, which I'm assuming most people have heard of at this point, in 1848 with Frederick Engels, which was regarded as one of the most popular socialist pamphlets in history. I personally have read it before, and a lot of people have probably seen at least some of the concepts from it. I know you have.
I remember, like, learning about it in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
What class did you learn about it in? I didn't learn about it.
It was called Sociology Through Literature.
Damn. And things like that remind me of how liberal of a high school we went to.
Yeah.
Just to get a few things out of the way first, I'm going to give you some definitions, just so it kind of like lays the framework for the rest of the information I'll be giving you. So first one, communism, which is a branch of socialism. This definition comes from Britannica.com. And communism is defined as a political and economic doctrine that aims to replace private property and a profit-based economy with public ownership and communal control of at least the major means of production, i.e. like mines, mills, and factories, and the natural resources of a society.
People couldn't privately own water?
Yeah! There would be no private ownership of things that you need to live. Isn't that a fucking insane concept, y'all? I can't even think about that without literally wanting to slam my head into a wall. The water is privately owned.
Oh, you want to put out your fire?
Pay me. You're going to have to pay for that. you want to take a sip of water to live? You're going to need to pay me for that.
Okay. Or work for it.
Get up your ass and fucking work. Thank you, Miss Kim Kardashian. The next definition is the bourgeoisie. These are the owners of the means of production, i.e. factories and mines, who sell commodities produced by the proletariat. The proletarians are those who have nothing to sell but their labor power, which is basically their capacity to work. Okay, and with those definitions, we are going to get into class consciousness. So this was a concept that was originally coined by Karl Marx. And basically, class consciousness is a concept that refers to the awareness individuals have of their social class and its relationship to the broader economic system. So in order for the working class, the proletariat, to overthrow capitalism, they must first recognize their shared interest as an exploited group. So basically, yeah, it's the recognition that we, the working class, are a commodity. Our labor, our bodies, our minds have been commodified under capitalism. To directly quote the Communist Manifesto, Marx explains that these laborers who must sell themselves piecemeal are a commodity like every other article of commerce and are consequently exposed to all the vicissitudes of competition, to all the fluctuations of the market. So, yeah. Sound familiar? Free market capitalism.
Yeah.
We're commodities to corporations, basically. A few other defining things that we should get out of the way is that there's two kinds of, or forms of class consciousness, so to say. There's false consciousness and true class consciousness. False consciousness can be understood as the ideology that workers may mistakenly believe that capitalism benefits them or that social mobility is easily attainable. This prevents them from recognizing the exploitation that they face. So this is literally the ideology of the American dream.
Yeah.
pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but you'll never be rich. Don't you worry. And then there's true class consciousness, which we already went over. It's when workers realize that they are collectively being oppressed by the capitalist class. Okay, now we are going to get into class conflict, which is another theory coined by Karl Marx. So I'm getting most of this from thoughtco.com. It'll be linked in the description of the episode. But basically, the theory is that tensions and conflicts arise when resources, status, and power are unevenly distributed between groups in society, and that these conflicts become the engine for social change. So in this context, power refers to the control of resources, wealth, politics, and societal institutions. Essentially, Marx theorized that class conflict arose because the interests of the bourgeoisie and proletariat classes were at odds with one another. Conflict is then further escalated because the bourgeoisie holds a disproportionate amount of power or resources compared to the proletariat. Essentially, through this, an unequal system is formed and upheld in which not only do the proletariat not hold any meaningful power under this system, but social, economic, and political institutions are upheld by the bourgeoisie, which further benefit the owners of the means of production, thereby ensuring the institutional subjugation of the working class. Again, yay. Sound familiar? Moreover, the bourgeoisie perpetuates ideological influence over the working class to ensure their compliance in the system, which, as upholding an ideology of false consciousness, which we already went over, it's basically, that's the American dream, is an ideology of false consciousness. And it essentially just bolsters that, well, if you work hard enough, you can break the cycle of poverty, which is not true in most cases.
Yeah, it's not. It can happen.
It can, but in very, most Americans are much closer to being homeless than being a fucking millionaire. And we don't seem to understand that as a society. Moreover, that whole ideology just further pushes you down the capitalist rabbit hole and makes you believe that, yeah, I'll keep getting exploited and I'll keep working and doing and not getting paid enough because eventually it'll pay off. And it almost certainly never will.
Yeah, people love the idea of the American dream. And I think it's in part because they don't recognize the possibility of a better option.
Yeah. Because we've been so recognize
the exploitation. It's like, oh, like, this is kind of a bad situation that we are in here.
And we...
when you grow up in it and everything's like, yes, capitalism, then you don't realize, of course.
No, of course. The bourgeoisie literally... in power is literally convincing us that capitalism is great and that we all are actually benefiting even though people can't put food on the fucking table or afford to pay rent or get healthcare.
Now it's like three people have more money than the bottom 50% of the United States.
So... that is basically an example of Marx's theory of the superstructure, which refers to the political system, the state, and the social structures that make up society's ruling body, emerges from the base and represents the objectives of the ruling class. Thus, the superstructure upholds the authority of the elite and defends how the base, i.e. the working class, runs. The superstructure essentially is every single social institution, social, economic, and political institution that we know. And that is what continues to perpetuate capitalism. It's the only reason that capitalism is able to survive in the system that we're currently in. Because, yeah, I mean, if the superstructure didn't exist, the working class would realize, like, oh, actually, this system isn't working. And we are not represented in any of our politics and whatnot. Like, we need to change it. So in the contribution to the Critique of Political Economy in the preface by Marx, he explains, quote, "The totality of these relations of production constitutes the economic structure of society, the real foundation on which arises a legal and political superstructure and to which corresponds definite forms of social consciousness. The mode of production of material life conditions the general process of social, political, and intellectual life. It is not the consciousness of men that determines their existence, but their social existence that determines their consciousness." His mind.
Well.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, it's just that's a further explaining what we kind of went over. But in essence, we're socially conditioned to believe that the system around us is functioning to benefit us rather than to exploit us. So, according to conflict theory, as the socioeconomic conditions of the working class worsen, class consciousness would begin to develop, which would thereby expose their subjugation by the bourgeoisie. However, Marx theorized that one of two outcomes would come of this. One, If the changes made still upheld capitalism, the cycle would inevitably repeat, basically meaning another uprising would eventually occur. Or two, capitalism is scrapped, essentially, and a new system is implemented based on equality, such as socialism, then prolonged harmony would be achieved. So yeah, in essence, the system that we are under, even if there was an uprising, which I think a lot of us were hoping for potentially after the Luigi thing, we were hoping for that to happen. If capitalism were to remain in place, it would just continue. The cycle would never end, kind of thing.
Yeah, and as capitalism progresses, like, the exploitation gets, like, worse. Mm-hmm. Which makes it, in theory, more likely that people would revolt in some way.
Yeah.
Which they do in some ways, like striking and unions and things like that, but those are not like a complete overthrow. They're just like steps to make things better while maintaining
capitalism. Yeah, exactly. And overall, capitalism is unsustainable. And now, unfortunately, we are under an administration that is extremely pro-capitalism to a degree of like taking away social benefits. He's anti-union.
The bourgeoisie is his squad.
Yeah, the bourgeoisie is actually currently in power. We are, in fact, under an oligarchy. I mean, we have been for years. It's important to recognize that as well, that this didn't just, like, happen out of nowhere. But that is not to say that we are in any better position or even the same position that we were 2 months ago. It's a lot fucking worse.
Scurry direction.
It is a scurry direction. But it has, in fact, I mean, the fact that, yeah, healthcare, big pharma, all of these massive corporations are the ones that are buying out our politicians. We have been under an oligarchy for a very long time. And it's just manifesting in the way that it is now, where it's more overt than it was before. Mm-hmm. The scary part is that we now have a man in office who is arguably one of the most powerful people in the world now, who... Yep. doesn't care about that and is actively encouraging these corporations to further abuse their employees more than they did beforehand, which these employees are already being abused, but now the abuse is going to increase tenfold. Like, they're trying to take away, like, overtime pay. And I heard Elon That's Musk talking crazy. About some crazy shit where he thinks that we should have, like, a 120-hour work week. Just fucking insane.
That is absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
Wow, you really would...
You would really just die. You would really work and die. Yeah, so it's... That's the place that we are in now.
They're, like, playing... They're really playing a game. It's, like, a game to, like, make as much money as possible.
Literally. Like,
because it's, like, they're not in, like, a position of, like, being in danger of, like, not having enough resources or things. So it's, like...
They have enough resources to make sure that everybody else in this country also has resources, and they don't care. They do not care. They want to continue to grab more. Literally, I think about it sometimes. I'm like, if Karl Marx saw where the United States was right now, I think he would flop over and die again. Like, I think he would actually, I think his head would explode. Like,
yeah.
Because things weren't even nearly this bad back then. And now it's like, we actually are in the late stage capitalism that he theorized was going to happen. And it's worse than he thought it was going to be. Like, we are getting to a place where it's even worse, which is horrifying.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if things go according to his predictions.
So, as we talked about earlier, Luigi was almost a vessel for, or what we thought would be a vessel for, an awakening of the working class to recognizing that we are all facing the same demons, so to say. And I think, obviously, like we already mentioned, it's kind of fizzled out now, which is really depressing. But there definitely was responses on, and I'm literally just speaking from me scrolling through TikTok, but I definitely saw responses from people on both sides of the aisle saying, like, it's not a us versus them, like a Republican Democrat issue. This is a top versus bottom issue. Like, this is the rich being greedy and we are suffering the consequences for it. Of course, that didn't stick, unfortunately, because Fox News and other conservative outlets love brainwashing poor people into thinking that billionaires are for them, which is fucking evil, but that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day.
I remember seeing TikToks of this guy, like, singing about Luigi being hot and then posting another TikTok that it was on Fox News, and Fox News was like, look at what the Gen Z is doing with that, like, making light of this murderer. And it was really
Fox
funny.
News.
They know how to distract. They know how to distract.
They know how to distract. Also, y'all don't know what a joke is. Have you ever heard of a joke? Have you ever told a funny joke? It's literally like, you can laugh sometimes. It's okay. You don't always need to be like a reptile person. You can laugh sometimes. The world will not fucking explode. I mean, maybe it will explode. I don't know. Yeah. No, well, I remember seeing on TikTok, apparently like Ben Shapiro posted a video, like a YouTube video. I fucking hate that man. He is he's a little rat. He's disgusting. Anyways, he like posted a video right after talking about how, like these liberals, blah, 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 blah. Like they're killing the CEOs and they're just needing it. Like all this pro-capitalist, anti-leftist shit. And a bunch of conservatives in his comments were like, no, dude, like, this is how we see it. Like, that man had blood on his hands, too. Like, he was evil, too. You know, them sharing their stories, creating somewhat of a community saying, like, you know, I have thousands of dollars of medical debt that I will now have to pay off for the rest of my life. Or I don't even have health insurance, blah, blah, blah. So there was, like, a joint, it seems like, in my very minimal observation of that side of the aisle. There was maybe a second where they did genuinely believe, oh, maybe, you know, they had maybe a second of recognition of, some people did. Some people are way too far down the rabbit hole that they don't know what the hell's going on. But I think a lot of people that are relatively in tune and know what is going on in this country understood that this was a reaction of subjugation, and class consciousness is important in order to get us out of where we are currently heading. I also wanted to talk about, so when all the Luigi stuff went down, it reminded me of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which was national news when I was a kid. And at this point I did live on the East Coast, and I did attend a few of the protests as a child. Went with my dad.
Hey y'all.
Shout out to my dad for always making sure I was politically aware. Actually, shout out to both my parents for always making sure I was politically aware. Y'all are the best. Anyway, so I kind of wanted to give a little brief overview. I know a lot of the listeners were probably really young when this happened, because I'm assuming we're catering to our age range. So I'm not sure if y'all remember it very well. We were like literally kids. But anyways, the Occupy Wall Street was a movement that took place in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. It began on September 17th, 2011 in the financial district of New York City. Protesters camped out in Zuccotti Park for 58 days. And in response, this was, like I said again, huge. Like, this was all over the news feed for weeks. In response, similar protest camps sprung up across the United States. Basically, the protests were in response to the fact that big banks and other financial institutions essentially got a get-out-of-jail-free card from the United States government. They didn't really have billions any consequences.
Hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yes. No consequences.
Why don't you give some of that to the people that are struggling?
Yeah. To the people that, and at this, again, at this time, thousands of Americans were losing their homes, losing their jobs, lost all of their life savings. Like, it hit the global economy and the American economy like no other. It was the worst financial crisis that we had experienced since the Great Depression. The protests, again, lasted about 58 days. In New York, it got broken up by the police eventually, and they had a few attempts of trying to reassemble it, but it never gained as much traction again as it did the first time around. Overall, it's contested whether or not it was seen as a success or not. Personally, I think that it shifted the conversation in mainstream media to discuss economic inequality in the United States more so than we had been discussing it previously. But regardless, people have a lot of mixed emotions about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I said, I attended a few of these protests. I don't remember them super well. All I remember is my dad made us t-shirts. Me and Kilton went, my little brother. Kilton was probably like 2. And we literally had these little t-shirts that said we are the 99% on them. And I think we all still have the t-shirts, which is kind of a nice memorabilia from probably our first protest. But I actually called my dad, too, in preparation for this episode and asked him what he kind of remembered about this time period. Like I said, because I don't really remember much about it or, like, what the general feelings were. And he said there was a lot of feelings of anger, outrage, and frustration in the wake of the financial crisis. He basically felt that everyone felt like they were ripped off. Nobody felt like there was any justice. And they felt that nobody was held responsible, or the institutions that caused this crisis were not held responsible for it. He was also talking about how unemployment went through the roof, people lost their houses, and essentially no change came out of it. He did recall saying that he did feel hopeful for a fleeting second, but it kind of all dissipated. And then, yeah, he also talked about after the crash, how he was directly impacted. For reference, my dad's a contractor. He said work had really dried up and he had to find unique ways to support his family and continue to provide us a house and food and whatnot. But overall, yeah, he said it was an extremely difficult time. And I do remember this. I remember it hit both of my parents very hard separately. And yeah, we definitely suffered for it. And he actually told me too, he almost bought a house with one of the, if you guys don't know, go watch The Big Short. It's a great movie that really talks about this and makes it super digestible. One of my favorite movies. But he was telling me that he almost bought a house with one of these interest-only loans, which were basically the loans that caused the huge bubble. Mm-hmm. And it was almost a blessing in disguise that he that it crashed before he could do so, because it would have totally fucked him over.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of a big, really big, really complex situation.
Yeah.
That who fucking knows how to solve it?
Yeah. It's extremely difficult to figure out how to solve it, especially if you're part of the class that doesn't have any power in society.
Yeah, and it's like you have no choice but to participate in it and sell your labor.
Literally. Hopefully, conversations start to shift, and I don't know, people, especially in the United States, are extremely afraid of the word, are very afraid of the word communism and socialism.
Yeah, I mean, historically, communism's theoretically has been a good idea, and in practice has been horrendous in some occasions.
Yeah, well, they haven't. Communism hasn't even ever actually been practiced.
Yeah, but it's sort of like, that's communism, when it's not really, that's not really what it is.
Yeah, and Americans generally don't really have an understanding of what either of those systems actually are. They just associate it with bad. Yes. But hopefully we will get to a point, because I know that the working class, we all have very similar interests.
Let's just call it something else, and then people will be like, period, that sounds really good.
Yeah. Petition to start to create a new name for socialism, and then we can just implement that and pretend like it's not socialism.
It's not the practice that's turning people, I think it's the name.
Oh, yeah. It's because it's a buzzword now. Because, yeah, politicians don't want socialism. Politicians and corporations do not want socialism.
No. A corporation hates to see socialism coming.
Yeah. So, how do we tackle this issue? How do we bring class consciousness to the people?
That is such a big and complex and difficult question.
It is.
I think that in some ways it happens with, like, striking and unionization and activism and stuff like that. And corporations push back against those things.
Yeah, they sure do.
But I think, it's got to bring people together people have to unite in some way in order to, like, form the class consciousness.
My theory is that we collectively, as the working class, as the majority, because the working class does, although under capitalism, no, we don't have a lot of power. Thankfully, we still live in kind of a democracy. I think it classifies.
We have numbers.
We have numbers. That's the thing, is we live in a democracy. We have the numbers. If we were to mobilize across both sides of the aisle and actually target issues that that working class Americans do face, we would be able to hopefully reconcile and eventually topple capitalism. That would be the end goal, is to abolish capitalism in this country. But I think at the current state that we're in, we live in such a highly politicized and polarized society that people don't vote for policies that would directly benefit them. They rather vote for a party, which is the killer of democracy, usually.
Yeah, we're not finding any unity there.
No, we're not finding any unity. And we would need to get to a place where people are starting to detach themselves from their political parties. Because if we're being so real, yes, we are currently in a place where one party is exponentially worse than the other. But fundamentally and historically, both parties have been the parties of the bourgeoisie. They are not the parties of the working class.
Yeah.
So it would be a understanding that both parties are not standing for us, the working class. We would need to either create a third party that actually does, or demand one of the parties starts implementing pro-working class socioeconomic policies, which would take a lot of work, and it would take a lot of, I hate saying the word deprogramming because the fucking right uses it, but truly, like, deprogramming and a recentering of what actual socioeconomic issues are impacting you as the working class, and actually asking for meaningful legislation that would tackle those. And we are not in that place, for fuck's sake. We just elected a man that is going to raise everybody's taxes who don't make more than $350,000 a year.
On that.
And the majority of the people that voted for him are working class. So obviously there is a disconnect within the working class of understanding what policies are going forward and how they are actually going to impact them. It's either a complete lack of understanding or indifference, because we have not adequately as a society educated people to know what policies that they should be voting for that would directly benefit them.
Yeah, because the goal is not to benefit the people, it's to get a bag.
Exactly. Because we are operating under a capitalist system that does not care whether you live or die, so long as you are giving your labor to a corporation, basically. So we would need to completely recenter it, and the only way I could really see that happening is a complete revolution. It would have to be a complete restructuring of every single social, political, and economic system that we currently live under. Which is it's possible. Yeah, it's really possible. Hard.
And it just feels like, of course, like we want to know what to do, and we want it to happen, and we want it to happen quickly. And big changes don't normally happen quickly. And that is upsetting.
Yeah.
But there are obviously ways to make it go faster.
Of course.
If it's like a lot of people come together and have the same ideas or the same goal, then it can make things happen. But getting people together is a challenge.
It's a challenge, especially in today's society.
I don't fucking know how to do it, so take what I'm saying with a grain of salt.
Yeah, we're two 22-year-olds talking about a very, very complex issue, of course.
Yeah.
We don't know, but we can look at the world around us and understand that many people are unhappy with their current situations, and with that, we can hopefully predict that there will be eventually a demand for a complete restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our hope. Stay educated, keep talking about these issues, because the more that we talk about them, the more that other people will start to talk about them, and the more that this becomes an issue at the forefront of politics rather than a bunch of bullshit that both parties push that is not a fucking important issue. And hopefully we will get there.
Hopefully we will get there. Yeah.
Yeah. On that depressing note, that's the goal.
It's hard. It can be hard to be hopeful about it because it seems like such massive changes that would need to shift.
Yeah.
And yet, what is our alternative?
Of course, yeah. There is no alternative.
Gotta have hope.
Gotta have hope.
We gotta try.
Gotta hope that things are gonna get better, and we gotta do what we can to ensure that they do get better for our own generation and the generations after us.
Yeah.
Alrighty, y'all. Well, that will conclude our episode for this week.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening. And if you have any suggestions about content that you want to hear about.
Any suggestions on how to crumble capitalism?
Yeah, that's also, we're taking suggestions for that too.
We don't fucking know how to deal. Come on.
So if you know how to dismantle capitalism.
Throw that in the suggestions box.
Throw it in the suggestions box. You can send us an email or something. We would love to hear your ideas. Maybe we can start our own revolution. The scraping by revolution.
Scraping by crumbles capitalism.
Period. That's our next goal.
Yeah. This is our grassroots.
This is our attempt at liberating the working class.
Yeah.
But yeah, on that note, if y'all have any suggestions about things you want to hear about, we do not currently have next week's topic picked.
We do not.
So if you want to hear about anything, we would love the feedback. But yeah. I guess with that,
may you scrape by with ease.